Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the session. My name is Doug Gibbermedhin. I'm an associate on the healthcare team at J.P. Morgan. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing the BraveHeart Bio team. Joining us today is CEO Travis Murdoch. A quick reminder on format: this will be a 15-minute presentation followed by 10 minutes of Q&A, so please save your questions for after the presentation has ended. And with that, I'll pass it off to Travis. Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much, and thank you for the opportunity to present, and thanks, everyone, for coming to the first session of the day. Happy to kick off the second day here. Just to note, these are forward-looking statements. So BraveHeart Bio is a new company really focused on transforming the care of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and related conditions. Our lead program, BHB-1893, is a next-generation cardiac myosin inhibitor with best-in-class potential across efficacy, safety, and convenience. I'll share with you some of the emerging obstructive HCM data, which really demonstrate rapid and deep LVOT gradient reductions with a high rate of complete gradient response and meaningful improvement in biomarkers and functional measures. At the same time, we're seeing a very shallow LVEF dose response curve and a wide therapeutic window. We believe this supports the potential to replicate efficacy in a phase III study with minimal or no titration, enabling a highly convenient and differentiated dosing regimen. This potential best-in-class profile could enable a broad development strategy for BHB-1893 across obstructive HCM as well as non-obstructive HCM. And as you know, OHCM is a large and growing market with persistent unmet need where existing CMIs have been limited by titration complexity and REMS burden. As a company, we are fully funded through a planned registrational study. We raised $185 million last year to really support this study. We've built a seasoned management team, and we're supported by some fantastic investors. And we hold exclusive rights to BHB-1893 ex Greater China. Our partner, Hengrui, holds rights in China, and we plan to initiate a global phase III study this year. HCM is a large and growing market opportunity. It's one that we believe could be well served by a potential best-in-class CMI. On the left, what you see is the prevalence of HCM. I'd note a couple of things. One, in addition to the diagnosed OHCM market, there's a penumbra of patients who remain undiagnosed or underdiagnosed. In addition to that, beyond OHCM, there's a large and growing non-obstructive HCM population that really remains unserved. What we've seen on the right is some claims analysis that we've done is that since the launch of Camzyos, mavacamten, in 2022, there's been an increase in the CAGR of growth of diagnosis of these patients. And so we believe there's a large white space for best-in-class opportunity and that this is a large market that can support multiple entrants. Our corporate strategy is really to aim to develop the preferred treatment for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy patients across three different vectors. The first is efficacy, where we believe we could achieve improved cardiac performance both on gradient and diastolic function, which we believe could both translate to better clinical outcomes. At the same time, we are developing a target product profile really to focus on minimal LVEF cost for that gradient reduction and as well to develop a therapy that can get target exposures while limiting the need for echo monitoring. We're trying to create a therapy that is both efficacious but also convenient for patients. And the way that we plan to do that is by really focusing on some of the features of this program, including rapid onset, which really enables minimal titration and which ultimately we believe could lead to a differentiated product profile and minimal echo burden. I've been really fortunate to get to work with a fantastic team here at BraveHeart. This is a seasoned team of company builders, of clinical developers, and of folks with really deep HCM experience and supported by a board of directors that's built great companies and a set of investors that really is in it for the long run. So BHB 1893 is rapidly progressing to registrational studies. I'll share some of the emerging data, which we believe supports a global OHCM study, in addition to an ongoing phase three study, which is in China with our partner Hengrui, which is on top of standard of care. So we plan a phase three initiation in 2026 in obstructive HCM. Our current design that we plan to discuss with regulators is a head-to-head study versus beta blockers. In addition, we are planning to see non-obstructive HCM data from a fully enrolled study from our partner Hengrui, which we plan to see in mid-26. In addition to this, a HFpEF study has been planned, and we'll be excited to see those data as well. So the clinical development plan for 1893 is actually quite rich. And this really just shows an overview. There's been over 250 subjects dosed to date. And in addition to the phase two studies that we'll speak to, there was a very deep set of phase one studies conducted, which include a formal DDI study, and which really demonstrates that there's little to no liabilities there. A impaired renal function study, given that we have about 50% clearance renally of this molecule, and a ethnic PK study looking at bridging into white populations in Australia. There's been an extensive clinical package, as I mentioned, that underpins some of the best-in-class potential that we're seeing. A number of advantages have been seen across studies, the first being rapid and deep gradient response. As you can see on the right, within 2 days of starting 1893, we're seeing very deep reductions in LVOT gradient. This is a Valsalva LVOT gradient, so you're seeing deep response below 30, which is the upper limit of normal. And all patients achieve this by day 14. What you're also seeing on the right is rapid reversal following discontinuation, which we think will lead to potential better safety of this program and really reflects the short half-life and consistent PK. We've seen minimal change in LVEF with no low EF events in this study. And as mentioned, we have a bridging PK study, which is very consistent. And we've seen no significant DDI issues in a formal verapamil, which is a CYP3A4 inhibitor study. In addition to this phase one package, we have a very robust phase two study in obstructive HCM, which we plan to share at an upcoming medical conference. But suffice to say that the data were very consistent in terms of the rapidity and depth of gradient responses, in terms of the LVEF exposure response being very shallow, and in terms of supporting the potential for a highly simplified dosing regimen. And so, in addition to the phase three program that's ongoing in China, on top of standard of care, we plan to initiate, on the back of these data, a global phase three study evaluating BHB 1893 head-to-head versus beta blockers with a highly simplified dosing regimen. Let's talk a bit about the phase two study design in obstructive HCM. So this was a open label dose ranging study that evaluated BHB 1893 in 42 patients, 14 per group. These patients, given the very short half-life, BHB 1893 reaches steady state within about a week. And so these patients were titrated on a weekly basis. We looked at two different dosing regimens, BID as well as a QD dosing regimen. After this OHCM study, all these patients were enrolled in an open label extension. Those data continued to be maturing in a very productive way. And so we'll look forward to really sharing these data, which we think really supports this differentiated profile. As mentioned, in addition to our obstructive HCM study, we have an ongoing non-obstructive HCM study, which is a phase two dose ranging study that we expect a near-term readout in mid-year. Some of the features of this study that we think are quite valuable: one, it's placebo-controlled. As many of you know, placebo response rate has been something that has plagued these studies historically, and so having a placebo arm we think is quite valuable. It's dose ranging, and importantly, the design was such that the titration schedule, we believe, enables patients to maintain target drug exposures as well as minimizing any drug interruptions. And so we're looking forward to sharing these data as well this year. And we hope that these data support further advancement of 1893 into pivotal studies in non-obstructive HCM. So the study design, just to speak briefly to, in non-obstructive, there were two different dosing groups which were matched with the placebo arm, where patients were either titrated weekly 20 to 40 milligrams BID or 20 to 40 to 60 milligrams BID. The titration scheme is shown on the bottom right, and it's very much consistent with precedent studies in that patients were titrated to an EF of 50 to 55%. If patients overshot with an EF of 45 to 50, the dose was decreased. And so, you know, unlike some precedent studies where we've seen long interruptions, in this case, the study was designed to really maintain drug exposures without the need for drug discontinuation. And we believe that the features that we're seeing for 1893 in obstructive HCM, some of which I shared today, could support a differentiated profile in non-obstructive HCM as well. So as we build towards these upcoming phase two data, we are really aiming towards a target product profile that's optimized on these three vectors of efficacy, safety, and convenience. And the first, we're looking to develop a molecule that could improve cardiac performance in a differentiated way, with deeper gradient reductions, with more patients achieving a normal gradient in obstructive HCM, which is a key clinical feature and predictor of outcomes in these patients, but also that could have differentiated effects on diastolic function, given that many of these patients with obstructive HCM and with NHCM, certainly one of the primary issues they have is one of diastolic dysfunction. At the same time, we are aiming for a favorable safety and DDI profile, and have seen that to date. In terms of the shallow LVEF exposure curve, enabling efficacy without meaningful EF cost. In terms of a predictable pharmacokinetic profile, where there are not specific CYP liabilities and multiple avenues of drug clearance. And finally, aiming as we move into phase three to continue to demonstrate this very rapid onset of clinically meaningful features, but at the same time, achieve this with a very simplified dosing regimen, which has been one of the major issues with this class. And so we look forward to sharing more and to advancing 1893 into registrational studies this year. So in conclusion, we're a fully funded, operationally focused team that's moving from a standing start last year into global phase three development. We'll look forward to a number of catalysts this year in obstructive and non-obstructive HCM. We'll look forward to sharing more about the design and startup as we discuss with regulators a phase three study in obstructive HCM that we believe could deliver a differentiated TPP. We also look forward to sharing more on the mechanistic differentiation of 1893, which underpins the emerging clinical profile that we're seeing. And as I mentioned, fortunate to be working with a very seasoned team. This is the best team I've had the opportunity to work with in my career. And we're excited to be working towards delivering another option for patients here, and one we think could really move forward standard of care in these diseases. With that, thank you to JP Morgan for the opportunity to present, and we'll open it to questions.
I can kick things off. I guess when you think about clinical differentiation, there's these three pillars: safety, efficacy, and convenience. I'd be curious to hear more about that last part, the patient experience convenience aspect of it.
Sure. Thanks for that question. So I would say that, you know, we have done some pretty extensive TPP testing. I would say patients care obviously about having, if they're going to take a drug that has potential safety issues, they care very much about efficacy. And one of the great things with what we've seen with historical CMI data is that certainly patients feel better when they take CMIs and have constructive effects on gradient in particular and on diastolic function. However, you know, these are very complicated medications to get onto from the point of view of titration, echo burden, and to stay on. And so we believe that ultimately delivering a more simple regimen for patients, and at, you know, some of the data you saw in gradient suggests that the starting dose could be the dose for many, many or most patients for 1893, that could really deliver a potential treatment option that could have broader applicability to this large and growing patient population.
Thank you.
Can you speak more to your thoughts around the phase 3 study design in terms of the comparator arm?
Sure. Thanks for that question. So in our discussions with physicians, and I think a bit uniquely because we also benefit from an ongoing phase 3 study in China, which is, you know, in its design, I would say is more in the vein of precedent studies that were on top of largely beta blockade. You know, I think on the back of the MAPLE-HCM study, there's a recognition in the physician community that perhaps beta blockade is not necessarily what should be used first line in these patients, and that certainly, you know, across both biomarkers and feel and function parameters, we saw you know, that CMIs could be a better option. That said, I would say there is still equipoise to run a study like that, which is why we think it is the optimal study design.
Another one here. Taking a step back, when you think about the broader landscape of HCM, where do you think 1893 fits in?
Sure. I think we believe in, well, first, I think we believe intrinsically this is a very large market, and one that, you know, if you look at precedent markets of this size, there's room for multiple agents in a market like this. You know, I certainly think that it is the type of market, given that it's a large chronic disease, one where patients are young and will be on therapy for a prolonged period of time, where a program that ultimately delivers on a differentiated product profile really could be an important part of that treatment paradigm for patients. And so from our point of view, that's really what our focus is.
And I guess as a follow-up, what kind of data do you guys think you need to generate for 1893 to get there?
Well, I think the emerging phase 2 data and the phase 1 data that we shared suggests that there are multiple avenues to that. and, you know, across these three pillars that you articulated. And I think that, you know, it's incumbent on us to design a phase three study that helps to move the field forward and that continues to really deliver on that.
Can you please comment on the exposure or the how the trajectory of the LVEF to exposure slope compares to AFI and MAVA?
Sure. What I would say is that you know we'll be presenting more data on that exposure response curve this year. But you know I think it's favorable. I do think that you know there's always danger in comparing cross trial, but what I would say is that, you know, it looks very favorable. And what I would also say is that we've had, you know, as you saw in that phase one study, there were no low EF events. And so the data we've seen in phase two to date have been very consistent.
I guess given the REMS requirements, and the effects it has on the uptake of like CMIs, how do you think 1893's profile can expand the addressable and treatable population?
Sure, thanks for the question. So the agency certainly has required REMS with precedent programs, and you know I think as we you know see the current REMS, what we would aim to do is really focus on simplicity and continuing to move the field towards a simpler regimen. So, you know, I think it's early days to say, you know, exactly what that REMS looks like if there is a REMS. We have seen an evolution, for instance, of the mavacamten REMS over time. And so I think as physicians get more comfortable with this class, you know, we may see some loosening there, but it certainly is quite burdensome with the current REMS programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.